Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thank you so much for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories. Today, I'm going to talk about a picture that hangs in the lobby of the KYMN studios. It's an oversized photograph of Bridge Square from the turn of the century, and it hangs on the wall. The image is captured from high above this historic place in Northfield, and in the center is what looks like a water station for horses. And there are carriages on the street, and painted signs on the buildings, pedestrians going about their day, buildings that still stand today, and spaces that no longer exist except in the photographs of the past. Each time I look at that picture with one of my Art Zany radio guests, I feel like I discover something anew about the moment captured on some ordinary day in the history of Northfield. And I think there are a thousand stories in that tiny slice of life. Sometimes when I'm downtown Northfield, I pause to think about all the other feet that have walked the sidewalks of our community. I imagine their conversations, the clothes, the troubles on their mind, the places they might be going. I'm fascinated by the living that happened here over the past decades. Remembering helps me to feel a part of something that's bigger than we know and reminds me to appreciate more of the moments of everyday life. I think about the dreams of each of these travelers in time, and I hope that each of us can recognize the contributions of past Northfielders and resolve to try to make this place memorable for future generations. And I often think about what gets carried forward into the future. How will we remember this time 100 years from now? And I think that's part of why I love doing Art Zany Radio and having these conversations. I want to help people see the value in their stories and see how we are building something together that makes the world a better place. Today, we are going to talk about the iconic and historic Archer House. You can look up the grandeur of this building through online images. And if you know the building, you will surely conjure up an image in your mind of the red brick front, the white trim around the elegantly detailed front windows, and the architectural trim along the roofline, the front portico with the white railings across the expanse of the building. And I expect you will feel the centuries-old presence of this riverfront hotel space in the history of Northfield. And now, when you visit the Archer House website, the message says, "The Archer House has been closed permanently due to fire damage. Thanks to all who have stayed with us over the years." The Archer House has certainly been on the minds of everyone in Northfield and everyone who drives past it. I feel that heartache every time I drive down Division Street and see how the fire and water and weather have left the building empty. And I think the building is missing its stories. So let's take some time to add some of those stories out into the world and share some of the Archer House with all of you. We're going to be visiting today about those memories of the Archer House with historian Susan Vistendahl and author. We'll talk about a couple of her books. Welcome to Art Zany Radio, Susan.
Well, thank you, Paula. I'm always glad to be with you.
It's such a pleasure to have you again. And we also have a very special guest in the studio. And joining us today is Sandy Haas. She is one of the former owners and did a lot to bring life to the Archer House. Welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Well, thank you. This is really exciting to be able to share the journey of the Archer House from Dallas and our perspective.
Right, yeah, because you and your husband bought it in the 80s, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And I do want to let people know that Susan is doing an event at the library that we want to be sure you get on your calendar. That's on Thursday, September 9th at 6:30. And there is a registration that you need to do. That's at the Northfield Public Library at their events page. And I'll have a link to that on our website as well. So that's an exciting thing that you're doing. We're not going to reveal all that Susan's going to tell, but we're going to talk a little bit about some of those stories. I guess I want to start maybe by asking both of you, how do you feel when you walk the streets of Northfield? I often have that sense of the history that happened. Which one of you wants to start and tell us what you do when you're walking?
Well, of course, I've written three historic happenings books about Northfield, and so I have a certain amount of knowledge about the buildings. But I actually went on a Northfield Historical Society tour recently. They had a walking tour, and I was amazed to learn so much more about the architecture and so forth. So you can always learn something more about this wonderful town.
That's true. I don't think I know a lot about the styles and names and kinds of architecture, but I sure do love imagining the people. How about for you, Sandy, when you are in Northfield, what's on your mind?
Well, for me, it's like when I come back here, it's like there's such a big part of my heart that still remains in Northfield, even if I haven't lived here for very long. You know, taking on a project like, first of all, the Nutting Wall, and then we went on to buy the Archer House. And it was such a wonderful journey shared by many.
Yeah, absolutely. And for you, Susan, you've been really integral in bringing some of that history forward for us. Tell us, you know, what is it that intrigues you or wants you to keep asking questions and learning and looking around what's happening in Northfield and what has happened in Northfield?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'm not exactly sure how to answer that. I suppose it's because I do keep learning more and more about it. At some point, if you'd like, I can go through a brief history of the Archer House so that people get a little background on that.
Yeah, we could start with that. I think that people would maybe don't know that it was 1877.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was 1877, and it was built by a Hastings hotel keeper. His name was James Archer, so it was named after him. It was the Rice County Journal. I found some stories about the grand opening that they had in August of 1877 and how excited everyone was at that grand opening. They had a band from Minneapolis come down, and they danced until dawn at the Lockwood Theater down the block. Imagine that with those Northfielders back in that century,
yeah,
dancing until dawn.
I'm thinking, what would the music have been, or what the you know, would they have been fancy dresses?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Really fun.
I'm sure they were dressed to the teeth. Yeah, exactly. And they were so pleased because this showed that Northfield was a progressive town with its very own marvelous hotel for visitors. And one of the hotel owners that came. That came in 1889 was Henry Kahler, K-A-H-L-E-R, and his family went on to build a $1.75 million Kahler Grand Hotel across from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester in 1921.
A very well-known place. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So he was that family went on to work in the hotel. Hotels had other names. It was called the Hotel Manawa, which was the Indian word for rest, in 1903. Mm-hmm. Ball's Hotel in 1911. And then the longtime name was Hotel Stewart in 1912. And that's what it was when I was in college at St. Olaf in the 60s, the Hotel Stewart. And at that time, it was the home of the Jefferson Bus Depot, so a lot of the students knew that from coming into town and arriving at the colleges through that bus depot. And then Sandy later will tell you a little bit more about Dallas Haas and their work with it. But he took it over in 1981, and about only two-thirds of the hotel rooms were in any sort of an operating condition, and he brought back the Archer House name. It had been Hotel Stewart all that time. I know Maggie Lee wrote, who's an editor, longtime editor and writer, said that he ripped out everything. 15 tons of debris were taken from the third floor alone, and the two of them started out to make it very special. And if she'd like to, at this point, talk about some of the things that you did in those early years to make it special, would you like to do that?
Yeah, let's start with the Nutting Mall, which is where were connected with the building. And I guess I didn't realize, I always thought it was integrated into the Archer House, but it was a separate...
No, we bought that separately.
Yeah.
And renovated it in 1980.
And that was something I think I read in Susan's notes that was kind of a dream of yours to have a gift shop, and here Dallas went and bought a whole mall.
Yeah, he did. Well, it was pretty tough shape when we bought it. It had been neglected. There was a, my dream for a long time, you know, we all have dreams, was to have a gift shop. And so I, you know, we talked about it and joked about it. And so one day he came, there was a lease on the front part of the building for a travel agency.
Mm.
And the guy had just re-signed the lease. And so, it was hard for Dallas because he didn't know how to go about the renovation because he wanted that front space to be able to be kind of the showcase.
Yeah, you would want the shop in the front. Yeah. Right.
And so I kind of, put it on the back shelf. And he came in, it was early January of 1980, and he said, looked at me, he said, "You want to do a gift shop now?" And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because the guy decided to move back to Winona." So all of a sudden, this whole adventure began, just like that.
Wow.
And it was so fun. We had such a great time. And then once people knew I was coming in, then the girls came for the cocoa bean, and then office space, and the lawyers came in. And so it was really, it just boomed. I mean, he couldn't get it done fast enough for everybody. And so with that, having the gift shop when the hotel came for sale, it just seemed like such a perfect fit for us.
Now, I read that Maggie Lee was the one who kind of put the little bee in the bonnet of, maybe you guys should buy that. Tell us that part of the story.
Well, Maggie was always, she was so dear to us.
Into this community.
She loved the hotel so much. And I have a real cute story. When we were in the midst of, designing rooms and decorating rooms and everything, and I had a room that I was doing with the bent wood, the willows, in furniture. Mm. And I had, the guy had delivered like in March, all, and it was a bed frame or a bed headboard and a desk and a lounge, and I can't remember what else. Anyway, Maggie happened to be in the hotel that day when all this was happening. And so she was always so excited about everything. And so then about 2 weeks later, I came back up, and it was in the front of the building, so it had a lot of sunlight in that room. And I came up, and everything was blooming. All the willow.
Oh, no.
And it was just like spring. Uh-huh. Everything had leafed out. And so I had to call Maggie. And so then she wrote a whole story about my blooming furniture. So, she just did so much for us. And,
she
was just so excited right along with us. And really, everybody in Northville was kind of in the same place. They were just loved to come and see what was happening. And
yeah, it's the heart of downtown, really.
Well, absolutely. And they, it was like having all these cheerleaders out there.
And they
us.
Contributed so much. Mm-hmm. The Northfielders, you can mention that, how much they contributed.
I said we couldn't, you cannot do, you could do it alone, but we wanted to embrace the gifts and talents of the people in Northfield. And so, I had people who helped with, decorating and window treatment, wallpaper. I mean, there's so many great stories about the people that contributed to the hotel, and I was, Dallas and I were always so grateful because it really was a part. the heart of the town for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but wonder, in the notes, Susan had done an interview with you, and in those notes, there was a piece about finding some ceramic cats for your gift store.
Yes.
And I have to want to ask you if there's a connection to Maggie at all, because she had a giant cat collection.
Oh, yes.
So do tell.
My daughter had gotten this really cute cat for a birthday present, but there was no label on it or anything. And I thought, it was before I bought the store, and I thought, oh, that would be a really great item, you know. And I looked for these cats wherever I went to market, and I couldn't find those cats. And Dallas and I went to L.A. for the gift show, because he liked to go to the gift shows with me. So it was a way to combine a vacation along with a little bit of work. So we're in the big gift store or market, and I'm walking down. I turn and go walking down, and all I see is cats. I finally found my cats. And I'd get them by like 20, 25 at a time at the hotel. And it was just mayhem. And so we always had so much fun with the cats. And of course, Maggie had, I think she had several.
She did.
So, yeah.
And were they in each room? Is that what I'm understanding?
We put them here and there. Everybody would just kind of pick a place and put it up in their room. And the nice thing for the hotel was everything that was in the, like the pictures and the furniture, whatever. I mean, we sold everything, you know. It was an extension of the Golden Unicorn. So people could stay and buy a chair or something they liked out of the room, or a cat or a stuffed animal. And so it was a way for me to keep rotating stuff in and out of, you know, with fresh merchandise, you know. And everybody took home a treasure.
And you had hand-painted glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Tell them about that.
We had these beautiful glasses that were hand-painted. And then you get a thing of champagne. I couldn't think of it. And so that was our gift to people coming in, if for a wedding, an anniversary, birthday, whatever. And so, and then they had their names painted on them. So
they were truly custom.
Yeah, they really were. Yeah. So.
And when you bought the hotel, what was the condition of the building at that time?
Not good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Susan talked about
debris.
How many
on the
tons?
Third floor. 15 tons of debris on the third floor alone.
I was trying to envision what that looked like and how many dumpsters that must have filled.
But we wanted to live with it for a little while, just to get the feeling of the building, and the building would tell us kind of where we were to go.
So were there at the time, there wasn't an elevator, is that right?
No, there was no elevator. And that was everything. In fact, Dallas didn't have to put the elevator in until we did the new addition.
Mm.
When we did the new addition, then that's when the elevator went in.
And talk about how you and Dallas worked together. I think you guys both had a nice mix.
We did. I mean, I always said it was like yin and yang. I maybe said that before. But, you know, my strengths were his weaknesses and vice versa. So we were kind of just a match made in heaven, I guess I could say. But every room, we would go into the rooms by ourselves we'd take a pad of paper and pencil and go out and kind of draw the room and kind of visualize where we'd put the furniture. And the whirlpools were a really big part of the ambiance in the hotel.
That was the 80s, right?
Yeah.
The 80s.
And so we really worked together really perfectly. I mean, it was really fun. And we just enjoyed the adventure.
Tell us about that. Maybe there's a memory that comes up today about the construction and, you know, converting the rooms and trying to, you know, put them together. One of those days of working, you know, a lot of hard work.
It was just like I'd find a wallpaper, I'd find fabric, and it would just all come together in my head. It was a really magical time for me. I didn't realize I had a gift until you start doing these kind of things. And it just kind of flowed. You know, I tell him when I was, it was fine, whatever I wanted to do. He never doubted me.
But he had the construction know-how.
Yeah, he was the, oh my, yeah. He started building at the age of about 17. He bought his first land in Burnsville. We were still in high school.
That's amazing.
He couldn't even sign the for the loan. His ex-mother-in-law did for his first property in Burnsville. And that's where all of it began. But he was pounding nails as a little boy because his dad was in construction. And so he just had a natural gift. He really did. And he could carry it in his head. Mm-hmm. You know, he knew what he wanted to do, even if it was on paper. He just was kind of brilliant that way.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, what people remember now is probably from the renovations that you did to the front of the hotel.
Right.
Susan, you were showing me some pictures of it when it used to be this Hotel Stewart.
Right. Yes.
And it didn't have any of the front, I don't know if it's called a porch or...
Portico.
The portico is the door, right, but then the sides...
The portico is that part that fell down, in May that Laura Hakala had that video. That's the portico.
And so if people come to your talk at the library, they
will... That's one of the things that we're going to have. We're going to have some videos, including the KSTP interview that was done in December 2nd when Richard Reeve came down and he talked to Brett Reese and me about the fire and had some beautiful shots of indoors, which some of the other TV stations didn't have. And so we're going to run that... that couple minutes, and so you can see what the interior of it was like, including the Archer House bar, which had just been redone, which was not there very long, but they had just put money into it, about $150,000 over that summer, and then came the fire. But at any rate, yeah, so we're going to have that. We're going to have a drone picture of the Archer House after the demolition, or not a demolition complete, but yeah. So thanks to Tim Freeland for that. We'll have that. So we're adding some video components to my talk, is I guess what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, and that will be really exciting. I want people to know that is going to be at the Northfield Public Library. So I should also let you know that this is Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination. You're listening today as we're talking about memories and stories of the Archer House in downtown Northfield. I'm here with Susan Vistendahl and Sandy Haas. And Susan is giving a talk called The History of the Archer House on Thursday, September 9th at 6:30. That's in the large room in the main and floor Bunday room.
Yes.
And that's a part of the Defeat of Jesse James official event, a townie night event.
That's right, yeah.
And there'll be books available for purchase. You have some news about that?
I certainly do. I'm going to be picking up, right after this, I'm going to be picking up the second edition of Volume 1 of my Historic Happenings books. We decided that it was time to do a second edition, especially because the Archer House from 1890 picture is on the cover, and we wanted to put the painting that David Allen did on the cover, and also have to do, unfortunately, an update on what had happened to the Archer House. So we did earlier this summer. We decided, okay, let's go ahead and do a second edition, and so. By All Means Graphics in Northfield is my publisher, and they can get things done very fast. So all you people out there that have a book in you, you can go local with your book ideas. And so I have
Rob Shanilak is fabulous.
Rob Shanilak and Ronica Roberson, terrific layout, and just all very helpful people there. At any rate, I'll be picking that up. So that's new second edition. With updates on many of my stories. It was originally published in 2014, and some people have died that were in there, and some people have, like the coach at the high school, has since retired. There's a whole story in there about the 1997 football team and so forth. So Bubba Sullivan has since retired, but that story is still there. And it's a way to commemorate other people like Maggie Lee and Dan and Sid Freeman. And so there'll be a lot of people in there that I think people will like to be have in their memories. So that's so going to be coming out. I'll be signing those books. Also, Volume 2, which was about St. Olaf. Volume 3, about stories from Carleton. I just gave a copy of the Carleton one to the new president of Carleton College. And then the biggie, 2019, The History of the St. Olaf Band with my co-author, Jeff Sove. We'll be selling that as well, so a chance for people to buy that. And then I'll just say one other thing is that if you can't come and want a book, you can get them around town at various places, especially the Northfield Historical Society and the shop at By All Means Graphics.
Absolutely, and if people are interested, they should visit mynpl.org/events, and there'll be a place to register for the event.
And the registry is just very simple. It doesn't take more than a minute.
I think they just want to know who's coming in this.
It's a small venue,
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And only masks for those that are unvaccinated.
Yes, exactly. And so that is a wonderful thing that's happening, and I want people to be a part of that. And I guess one of the things that I was thinking about was that day, November 12th of 2020, was the day of the fire. And I think all of us can remember when we heard about, I think it was my husband saw it on Facebook and said, "What? Look at this, you can't believe this is happening." And it was just heartbreaking for us to see, and you know, we kept saying, hope they can save it. And our wonderful fire departments worked for 24 hours, I think, to try to keep that fire down.
2 million gallons of water, if you can imagine that they put on it. 2 million gallons to fight it. And, of course, that left a lot of the water damage, and then along with the smoke and the mold and the structural damage and so forth. And they've just announced August 26th that, unfortunately, it's going to take another 2 months before they can demolish it.
Yeah, we had thought that was going to be
again.
This month.
Well, yes. I mean, it'll be a year in November, so people are, wondering. But that took until May for the insurance investigation to end. And I know on that KSTP interview, Brett was saying, well, by Christmas, we should have the information about the insurance. And it took much longer, but...
And what were you thinking, Sandy, when you heard about the fire?
Oh, my daughter Jennifer called to tell me, and she was just sobbing, because she had her salon in the hotel for, I think it was, I can't remember what time frame, but I think she was there for about 15 years. She had her salon and when Dallas, because she's moved it in, I think, before he passed away, or she was going to. I just can't quite remember now, but I think he was before he passed away that she had moved her salon in there, and they were very close. And my girls grew up part of the hotel as well as the Unicorn. They were like 12 and 15 teenagers, and so the kids all worked at the hotel making beds and cleaning toilets. They were part of, just everyday work, in the hotel or on the weekends especially. But, with a family, really event, when it opened. And as a family, we were very proud of what we'd accomplished for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was integral to all of what's happening. I think maybe now might be a fun time to visit some of the places that are no longer there, but people might have memories of all the little shops that were around. The first one that comes to my mind is Treats,
because
that was there when I was in college, and it was... You know, just such a fabulous deli. And I remember being taken to lunch by a professor, and it was just one of my favorite memories of being in Northfield. So what are the ones that come to your mind? Tons of stores that have been in that space.
Let me just tell you something that Dan Bergeson said. He liked the onion soup there at Treats. Is that something you remember?
I don't remember. I probably wouldn't have ordered that. It probably was fabulous. I just remember how wonderful it was, the sandwiches and the salads. And
okay, well, Sam, we do have a 1986 poster that we're going to be putting in our slideshow, and people will be able to see some of the names, but I'd like Sandy to talk about some of these businesses.
Yeah.
Well, we had, you know, of course, the tavern downstairs was such a gathering place. And Chuck Pryor did such a wonderful job. Well, he wasn't the original, but when Chuck took it over, I mean, it's been 26 years, so my memory isn't always so great either. But we always had the best fun shops, you know, the deli or the coffee shop.
Hattie's
was such a gathering place.
I remember buying lots of tea.
Nanny Goats, you know, she did so many wreaths and decorations for the hotel, because I put her things, so she was moving, she had more room, so she could put her wreaths and, dried flowers, and so, you know, they would go out the door with a lot of people staying overnight, and remembrance.
We have a photo of her that we'll be showing her in her shop, right in front of her shop.
Well, you know, it was just...
From Maureen Valley, right. So thank you,
yep.
Maureen, for that one.
Yep. I couldn't remember her. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's been 26 years.
Nancy Moyer, yeah.
Yep. So.
And the cocoa bean, we should mention that.
Yeah, because that came when the girls found out that I was opening the gift shop. Then it was just a perfect match for us to have these two cute shops, you know, across from each other. And so they come in and get ice cream, sometimes come in the store and drip ice cream around the floor. And then we'd want to go get ice cream. And, you know, I was so blessed because I had such wonderful girls that worked at the Unicorn. Everybody took kind of treated it like it was their own, because, you know, that was just a really nice place to start from where we went from there, you know, to the hotel. And we had always had such wonderful people that came and helped us and were a part of the process of the hotel. And it was just open to everybody. I mean, there was, you know, Dallas would be there till midnight, 1 o'clock every day. He'd like to have to put everybody to bed before he'd come home. And I always got so disgusted because I'm not a good sleeper. So I'd be looking at the ceiling. He'd come in, lay down on the bed, and he'd be gone. I mean, he was just like he could switch, that on and off. And so, and then he'd wake up all cheerful at 6 o'clock in the morning.
There's a story about Dallas that I would love for you to tell, because apparently he went everywhere with one tool with him at all times.
Well, the Stanley tape went to heaven with him.
Tell us about that, because he was measuring all the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we went, it didn't matter where we went on vacation. And he didn't take the little one. He always had to take the big Stanley tape with him. But he'd be out, you know, measuring stuff. We'd be in San Francisco or someplace, you know, he'd always find something to... It was just kind of like, it was so attached to him and part of his personality, which, you know, really endeared him to so many people, too, you know, with the Stanley tape. And in fact, I had bought Jennifer a little Shih Tzu puppy, and he was just adorable. And so I said, well, what are you going to name him? She said, well, I'm going to name him Stanley. And I said, I didn't click right away. And she said, well, because of Dallas's tape, Stanley tape. So he and Stanley the dog, Dallas and Stanley the dog, had quite a relationship.
Yeah, and Stanley has a pretty great story to tell, because the Archer House was, you know, over the years, right. I mean, think about all the different people that stayed there, but there's one celebrity that you had a mix with. Tell us about that encounter.
We were really lucky and blessed to have Betty White come and stay with us. And she had been invited by St. Olaf to come and speak. And so...
That was the time when Golden Girls was on the air, and she was coming back because her character was...
1992.
Yeah. Right. And her character was from the town of St. Olaf, I think.
And so she, you know, I loved her so much because I got kidded about living in Northfield and St. Olaf. I always was kidded, you know, that I was somewhat like Betty White, which would have been grand.
And you had four girlfriends that watched the show,
yeah,
right?
We all watched the show, so each one of us was one of the characters. So I, of course, Betty was the best. And so anyway, so Dallas told me, guess what? He said, Betty White's going to come and stay with us. Well, I couldn't have been more excited. And so she came on a Sunday. So I put her in the Carlton suite. It was one at the top of the third floor, and it's a big suite. And so I went over to the Unicorn, and I brought all these stuffed animals, dogs and cats and whatever, and piled them on one of the beds for her. And then I went to the Cocoa Bean and got candy, and it just really filled the room up with personal things from, you know, that would make her feel at home. And so she went off to her lecture, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and the phone rang, and I answered, and it's Dallas, and he said, "Say, Betty's here, and she'd like to meet Stanley." So I picked Stanley up, because she loved Shih Tzu. That was her favorite, and I knew that.
Oh.
And so I brought Stanley down to the hotel, and she and I sat on the floor in the lobby and just played with Stanley. It's just one of the, you know, my dearest memories, because, you know, she was so wonderful. And I always say she is everything you would want her to be. She was just the sweetest woman. And there's, you know, sometimes people from Hollywood and stuff can have two personalities. And no, what you see is what you get with Betty. And I've always been so grateful for that experience.
In my new edition, we are going to have a picture of Betty White holding a dog, and it's not Stanley.
No.
But when I wrote about her in 2008 in my Historic Happenings at St. Olaf book, she had, when I originally wrote in the entertainment guide about her, she sent a picture to my friends at the Northfield Entertainment Guide, all my best wishes, and she's holding a dog. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to tell this story of Sandy's, and I'm going to put that picture of her holding that dog. So you'll see that in this new second edition.
That's
it was
great...
probably a Shih Tzu.
It was.
I think it might be.
That she loved Shih Tzu. And Stanley, I have a cute story about Stanley, because he and Dallas were so attached. Stanley loved Dallas, and vice versa. So, but Stanley was like Houdini. He could escape, get off his chain, and disappear. And, of course, I'd be sobbing and crying on the telephone telling Dallas, Stanley's gone again. So I'm talking to him as he had run away again. And this guy came in the hotel, and he said, you know, there's a dog sitting out here wanting to come in. Well, I said, well, Stanley went to visit Dallas at the Archer House. So, you know, he and Dallas had a wonderful relationship, and it was so cute.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Do we know, Susan, of any of the other famous people that might have stayed at the Archer House? How do they keep track of that?
Well, Booker T. Washington was there in 1900 to give a talk. I think it was for Carlton, but it was like in the Union Church there, I believe.
Mm.
And so that was probably, and then one of the members of the Collar family, younger member, would take people back and forth to the town depot, and he remembers doing that and polishing the shoes of Booker T. Washington in 1900.
Wow!
So yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure there were a lot of people, obviously, that would have stayed there when they were appearing at St. Olaf and Carlton. One apocryphal story is that Mark Twain stayed there. But, however, I know a few years ago, the Northfield Historical Society tried to check that out, and they couldn't. But you see that story popping up time and time again, that Mark Twain signed the book, either at the Archer House, or maybe it was the YMCA, or, I mean, you know. But I have to say now, they can't verify that Mark Twain was ever in this area during that period of time. So, sorry, folks.
Well, I'm certain, and maybe that's okay that we don't know everything, because everybody needs to have their, you know,
speculation.
Yeah, that's well, or just have their stories kept inside the hotel, and you know, not told. But there, I mean, there's thousands of stories from the Archer House, and it's such a treasure to be able to have these times with you. What was hard about the story is that you and Dallas had the dream, but then Dallas unfortunately died very young.
He did. It, you know, like I said, the night before, it was like after I collected myself and was thinking, you know, that it was like he had a premonition just because of the things he said and did. And
he was 56.
Yeah,
right?
He was 56. Just 56. Yeah. Mm. He would have been
very young.
Yeah.
The town was in mourning, essentially. They couldn't believe that it had happened to him, you know, because he was so young and vital. And I actually found a 1987, I believe it was, tape that I watched. I never met him, but I sort of met him through a library talk that he gave back in 1987 about his career. And I could see why everyone was just enthralled with him as a person. And they would, one year he was given... his industry was given a, you know, Industry of the Year award, and they were kidding him about how he would go and pick up baggage, you know, pretend he was like a bus boy, and then he told everybody, and I took tips too.
Yeah, his uniform in the summer was a plaid short sleeve shirt with his jeans, and Mr. Jacobson kept him dressed very well. And then in the winter, he had flannel plaid shirts. And so that was just, I mean, to try to get him dressed up to go anywhere was quite a task for me. I'd have to lay everything out and be very specific about what he was supposed to do because, you know, that's how he was seen and known, was with his traditional shirt and jeans. But they'd try to tuck the money in his pocket. Well, they would say, well, who did this project? And he'd say, I did.
Yeah.
You know, kind of sheepishly. And so, you know, he was a very humble man, Dallas was.
They remember a yellow pickup, was it?
Oh, yeah, that was his beloved truck.
Was it a pickup truck?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I have a really cute story. I don't know how much time I have.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
This is off track a little bit, but Dallas, you know, he always had ice cream buckets full of change in the yellow truck. Because we had apartments, and so he was always emptying machine, you know, washer and dryers and what have you. And he'd set it on the, and I'd say, well, you know, you gotta be more careful with that. I said, what if it fell out? Oh, that's not going to happen. So he was headed up to St. Paul for something, and all of a sudden his door, he was coming to a stop sign. There was a police officer behind him. And all of a sudden, the door opened, and the whole bucket of change fell.
Oh no!
In the mud, because it was raining. And the police officer came and said, "Sir, about this, what is this deal with all that change?" And he said, "Oh, I was taking it to the bank." And then it was all, and then he brought it home, and I had to wash all the change.
Oh, my.
Get the mud and stuff out of it.
Put it in the bathtub.
Yeah, I tried to tell him, but she never listened. Oh. So he was, you know.
It sounds like he was a beloved character in town.
He very much was, very beloved.
Yeah.
He just didn't have a mean bone in his body. He was kind and caring and...
And the two of you were great partners and in bringing the Archer House to life. And, you know, I would imagine this is a hard time for you trying to think about what, you know, what's been and what might be and kind of in that in-between space.
Well, I've tried to find peace, you know, because it was such a joyful time. So I have my memories, and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, grateful to, like I said earlier, I'm so grateful to all of you out there who helped participate in the Archer House, the beauty of it and the uniqueness of it. It took all of you to help make it such a special place. And, you know, I'm saying thank you from Dallas as well. So I still have a grateful heart and think about you. It's even all these years later, it's not, that doesn't leave me. It's just was a wonderful chapter.
Yeah, I think one of the things I loved was that you said that one of your jobs at the hotel was making memories for the guests.
Yep.
That you really worked hard to make sure that the people that came and visited had an experience or, you know, got the birthday celebration or the anniversary or the wedding was special.
Yeah.
And those memories people carry. And I think that's why there have been so many people, you know, because we have this big social network now that have heard of the story and have been, you know, just sharing memories of the Archer House. And you're a big part of that story.
Well, I have a cute story because I have one of my best friends from junior high. She did some of the painting in the hotel. She, in the geranium room, she painted this beautiful ceiling. And then she was helping me with the anniversary suite. We had taken the original furniture, stripped it down, and then Mary painted it and did her hand painting on it. And so it was up in the anniversary suite. There were a couple, three pieces. And so her signature was a little ladybug. And so I had put guest books in most of the rooms so people could write about it. And so this one day this lady came stomping down the steps to the lobby and she said, "I want to know that you've put me in a place with all these ladybugs." Oh, we got such a kick out of it. Dal said, "Well, that's just a painted ladybug. It's not infested with ladybugs."
Oh, it's so funny.
So, you know, people are but that's such a cute story because, you know, it was just these little ladybugs that Mary painted, but it got her all upset.
Yeah, and it was truly, as you said, you know, this community was a big part of bringing it to life.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. I couldn't have done it with all the people that sewed and helped decorate and be a part of the whole thing. I mean, everybody had joy from it. Oh, and I have one more cute story. Is I had my daughter's one of her really good friends was her mother was a home ec teacher, and Debbie was very creative. She was, I think, a year older than Jennifer, and they did 4-H together. So it was like in the spring, and Debbie came to me and she said, "Sandy, I've got to find a project for 4-H. And I said, "Well, let me think, you know, where I could use her in the hotel." I said, "How would you like to do a whole room for your 4-H project?" Because, you know, I knew her, so everything would be meticulous. And so I let her decorate pick the fabrics. And so Debbie, it was beautiful. And then she took it to the state fair, you know, her
model.
Rendition, yeah, her model. And she won grand champion at the state fair.
Oh, that's a great story.
It was called Little Women was the name of the room. Wow. But, you know, it's just all these, I mean, I just am so grateful for all the talent that I had available to me and for Dallas, you know. Mm-hmm. We appreciated everything everybody did.
Yeah, and that brought it to life. And,
well, absolutely. It made the hotel special because it was not just, it was created by a whole lot of wonderful, talented people.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why we wanted to visit about it today, because it's been on the minds of people, and we want to kind of bring some of those memories back into the world so that maybe we can start taking those to the next step.
I just wanted to mention that I will be speaking to Dallas Haas later today, and so I'll be incorporating... I'm sorry. Not Dallas. I wish I were talking to Dallas.
Me too.
No. I'll be talking to Brett Reese later today about Dallas Haas.
Yes.
I'll be able to add some of his viewpoint when I talk on Thursday as well. We have to give credit to the amount of money and resources and attention that Brett Reese and his company has put into it as well. It's a big loss for them. They put $1.1 million into it in 2011 when I first was writing about the Archer House. And during the pandemic, they also put an extra $150,000 in renovations.
That was just probably the bar. Yeah, more than that.
So it's been a blow to the whole community. And so, yeah.
And we do want people to go to that talk at the library. Again, that's on Thursday, September 9th, 2021, 6:30 to 7:30. And as you mentioned, if you aren't able to make it to the library event, there's going to be a premiere on September 24th on Northfield Public Broadcasting. That is channel, I wrote that down here, 187 on Charter Cable. And that is also going to be in their archives at npb.ci.northfield.mn.us, especially for those folks that are maybe out of state or, you know, has stayed here at one point and want to relive some of those memories. That would be a great way for them to be able to do that.
It will be rerun throughout the year, and then they will have a link. They'll be publicizing the link, so you can just go to it directly on demand.
That'll be incredible for everybody.
So that's another way to keep the legacy of the of
that's
the Archer
right.
House.
And you have something you want to share too, Susan, about an event happening a little bit later. That's in October. On October 2nd, Saturday, October 2nd, there's a Deep Valley Book Festival happening.
Oh, yes. And I'm looking forward to this, an in-person event after a year of Zooming. and I was able to finally be at the Senior Center of the 50 North in June. But that was the first live event after, you know, since the pandemic. But here's another one that's coming up October 2nd at the Loose Moose Saloon and Conference Center in Mankato. So I'm dying to see what that looks like.
Great name.
Yes. And By All Means Graphics is going to be there with not only my books, but the other books. And I thought I would mention that because the latest one is a 100th anniversary of the St. Olaf Theater Department book by Jeff Sove, who was my co-author on the band book. And we have one called Vietnam Medic, How Did You Find Me After All These Years by Denny and Karen Vinar, who now have the Paper Pendulum, which is
another classic.
Remember that, yes, Al and Eleanor Croon had that one for a long time in the Arch House. They were able to, they bought it, and suddenly there was a pandemic and so forth, so and then the fire, and so they moved to the old Jenkins Jewelry spot. So here's a little shout out for Paper Pendulum, and they have written a book about what happened earlier in their lives. And we have another author, Amanda Scow, Superhero Joey. Again, thanks to publisher Rob Shanilak, Veronica Roberson for their talent and professionalism.
Fabulous. So, yeah. Well, we have just about a minute left to wrap up the show, and I bet we could talk for hours about stories about the Archer House. I'm thinking, you know, you'd mentioned, Sandy, all the creative people that helped to contribute, and that Northfield's known for its creative people.
Yes, always.
Expect there'll be a lot of creative ideas about what might, you know, be next. What are your hopes that you know, 100 years from now, people will keep talking about related to the Archer House?
Well, I think the thing is the memories people have in their heart that they tell their family members to keep, you know, that's how they keep it alive. You know, through family, you know, traditions and visiting and laughing. And, you know, everybody has a story about that's personal to them from staying at the hotel.
That's right.
And so, you know, as long as there's people and families, I think, you know, they will continue on.
Any thoughts, Susan, in closing?
Well, I just want to thank you, Paula, for allowing this time for us. And I think it has meant a lot, in particular to Sandy, to be able to reminisce about those days in the Archer House. And so many other people have these memories as well. I reached out on social media to people, and I had many, many responses of people remembering that they'd been to special events there and how much it had meant to them.
Right, and we will get them back. And I think they'll be, like you said, the stories will keep going, but we have to keep telling them.
Well, both my girls had their wedding receptions there. And, you know, so, you know, there's family, there's generations that had, you know, did the same
special
as
events,
we did
yeah.
back in those days, you know, because it was a pretty place. You could go out and have your picture taken at the gazebo. And
right. And it was 144 years as it
right.
as we knew it.
Yeah.
And so hopefully there's 144 more years of something, you know, equally as delightful.
Right. But, you know, I'm just thankful for all the people who have loved the hotel so much. And even though it's been just, you know, a short period of time, it hurts our hearts to see this beautiful building that had so much tradition and and family gatherings and, you know, wonderful memories for so many people around the country.
And that's why we wanted to share the stories. And
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I want to thank Susan Vistendahl and Sandy Haas for being here on Art Zany Radio. It's been my great pleasure to be able to bring these memories and hope that you will continue to, you know, share those stories and keep you know, thinking about who's been here and what do you want to do to make the future better for Northfield. So thank you. Folks, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. Don't forget to add some Art Zany to your life. And of course, in the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop, and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-334-7372.